Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
You're listening to Soundcheck. You're listening to Sound with John Schaefer. You're listening to Soundcheck. You're listening to Soundcheck.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. I can't imagine anyone would need a reason to visit Stonehenge other than that, well, it's Stonehenge. And yes, even though you've seen it in so many pictures for so many years, it is still totally awesome to be there. Still, if you need any more prodding, Stonehenge now appears on Lonely Planet's list of the top 40 rock and roll travel sites. Yes, Stonehenge is made of all those big rocks, but that's not why it's on the list. This is why it's on the list.
No one knows who they were or what they were doing, but their legacy remains hewn into the living rock of Stonehenge.
Yes, that great moment from the rock and roll mockumentary, This is Spinal Tap, was enough to put Stonehenge on the list of the top 40 rock and roll travel sites. We'll find out what else made the cut, and you may have visited some of them. But first, we travel downstairs to our street-level performance venue, The Green Space, for a special set from two alt-country legends. Emmy Lou Harris and Rodney Crowell have been friends and collaborators for 40 years, but only now are they releasing a full album together. It's called Old Yellow Moon, and they're going to play some of it for us now. Here they are, Emmy Lou Harris and Rodney Crowell, with a song called Here We Are.
Did you say that you've been searching for a place you've never been? Well, here it is. Here it is. You've been down there on the bottom and looking out for friends. Here I am. Here I am. We both grown tired of running after rainbows. Here we are,
darling.
Here we are.
Here we are.
Here we are.
Emmylou Harris and Rodney Crowell live on Soundcheck in the green space. Watch the video on our website, soundcheck.org. The song is called Here We Are, and the album is called Old Yellow Moon. Rodney, Emmylou, thank you both for being with us on Soundcheck today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Rodney, did you write that song?
I wrote that song.
Was it a song that had been kicking around, or did you write it specifically for this collection?
Oh, no, I wrote that song.
He was just
many
a pup.
Years ago, I was a wee lad. And just in time for Emmy to record it with the great George Jones.
I think it was 75, very early on.
Somewhere back in there, you know. Yeah. And well, Emmy had recorded my songs, and I was, of course, delighted about that. And actually, Emmylou has really put me on the map as a songwriter. But then, you know, the caveat to it all was that, you know, she did it with George Jones. So I could go around, you know, say, hey, George Jones recorded one of my songs. Oh, yeah, my friend Emmy, too.
But there's, I mean, there's a, the reason I asked whether it was for this project is it just fits this project so well.
Well, you can thank Emmy for that because she's the one who had that
I kind of pushed for it, you know. I think Rodney felt that, you know, he would be competing against George Jones. But you see, I always loved Rodney's voice, love the way we sound together. And I think the song makes a lot more emotional sense for me and Rodney to do it on this project. You know, it's a great song, and it worked great as a duet with George, but it just takes on layers of meaning for me, you know, to sing that song with Rodney and where we are in our lives right now.
So does this album represent a kind of a completion of a very long, very large circle for the two of you?
Oh, it's still going.
or the start of a new circle.
But the two of you first, I mean, Emmylou, you first heard of Rodney while you were auditioning songs for another project.
Yes, auditioning songs. Warner's had put me together with a producer who had a great track record with Anne Murray, Brian Ahern. And and it was my first really big record since I'd kind of discovered what I wanted to do with country music and my voice and everything. But I didn't particularly have any material in mind. And I went up to Toronto, where Brian was living at the time. And he for an entire day, he played me stuff that I didn't like. It just didn't, you know, it just, you know, you just have some kind of a barometer, you know, that you know something is going to appeal to you. And then at the very end, he hadn't heard Rodney yet. He had just signed him and literally took the mailing wrapping off this cassette, stuck it in, and my meter pinned at that point when I heard Bluebird Wine and Song for the Life. And so Brian got me and Rodney together in D.C. where I was living and working. And the first song he played me when we met was Till I Gain Control Again. So, you know, I just kind of knew that I had stumbled across something really great. And plus, we just got along great from the very beginning. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and speaking of things coming full circle, so now Brian Ahern also produced this record, and the song, Bluebird Wine, there's a version of it on this record as well. Why did it take so long to make this record?
Well, I mean, my answer, I guess, is because Rodney and I are real road dogs. I mean, we're always in the studio, we're always touring. Rodney also produces other people's records. He writes books, and you know he's always writing songs, and I'm busy with the same thing, and I also have a working dog rescue in my backyard, which is kind of like my second job at this point, my second career, but I need to keep this career going so I can pay for the second one. You know, I think we always knew we would do it, but sometimes you think it's just going to happen on its own, and finally, I guess I just realized, you know, time was passing, and I wanted to make sure that I did this record, you know, while I could still sing, still think.
But now is the perfect time.
It is the perfect time. I agree.
We would have made a fine record in 1987 or 94, but it wouldn't have been this one. You know, that was worth the wait for me. I was practicing so I'd be ready for when it happened.
Yeah, we were both practicing.
So the album is out. It's called Old Yellow Moon. Emmylou Harris and Rodney Crowell performing some songs from the record for us here in the Green Space. Again, you can watch video on our website at soundcheck.org. So after the two of you have had this long friendship and association going back four decades, have you talked about songs over the years? I mean, when you finally made the time to do this record, how much, you know, bickering and arguing was there about what songs would happen, or did you already kind of, were you already halfway there?
I want to go on record right here. We've never had an argument in our whole life together.
We never have had one.
I don't ever remember a disagreement. Mm-hmm. No, truly. I mean, you would think it's that easy to work with Emmy for me, you know, because Emmy knows what's right, and most of the time I know what's right, and what is there to argue about?
Well, but you have 40 years of songs, so you had to pare it down.
Oh, that. Oh, well, that's not an argument. That's just a matter of, we'll get to the rest of them later.
That was fun, actually. I mean, we brought some songs. I brought some songs. Brian brought some songs. Rodney brought some songs, and, you know, it just became kind of obvious. You know, which, in the words of Alan Reynolds, who is a great producer and songwriter in Nashville that I've worked with, and he said, the song has to shimmer with the singer, you know, because not every song is right for every singer, you know.
Well, it sort of goes back to what you were saying about, you know, as good as Here We Are was when you did it with George Jones, yeah. Something in your mind's ear was saying, yeah, but Rodney and me, that
well,
would be...
at this point in our life, it seemed like the song had, you know, it was time for us to do it with what the song was saying. So
what about Dreaming My Dreams? Who brought this one to the table? Emmylou?
Yes, I did.
Where did this come from?
Well, Dreaming My Dreams is one of the great classic songs, definitely country songs, performed most especially by Waylon Jennings, who had kind of a hit with it, but Waylon never cared about hits. He used to say, "I couldn't go pop with a mouthful of firecrackers." And but he, I love his. It's the title track of the album "Dreaming My Dreams," that Jack Clement produced, and Jack had also recorded the song. And in a way, I didn't bring it to the table first because to me it had just been done. You know, it was just one of those sacred vessels. But we were working on another song that we liked a lot and having difficulty making it kind of work. I don't know what the problem was. And I kept hearing in my head, well, let's lay this song over the feel of Dreaming My Dreams. And then finally I just said, oh, heck, let's just do Dreaming My Dreams. Because the way we do it, it becomes a conversation between two people. And so it takes on a different, you know, wardrobe. You know, it takes on a different mantle of feeling, I think, and it takes a different kind of storyline.
Now, I'm a big believer in giving credit where due, and while Waylon Jennings is the person that's most often associated with this song, he didn't write it.
No, Alan Reynolds, who I mentioned earlier, who talked about a song shimmering, he wrote that song.
All right. You want to play it for us?
We will do.
All right. Emmylou Harris and Rodney Crowell. The new album is called Old Yellow Moon. They're performing some songs from it for us on Soundcheck.
I hope that I won't be that wrong anymore. Maybe I've learned this time. I hope that I find what I'm reaching for, the way that it is. But I'll always miss
dreaming my dreams with you.
Emmylou Harris, Rodney Crowell performing live in the green space in a song called Dreaming My Dreams. Again, you can watch the video on our website at soundcheck.org, and Rodney and Emmylou are performing at the Beacon Theater on March 27th, along with Richard Thompson's Electric Trio. They're performing for us in the green space on Soundcheck today. This next song is called Chase the Feeling.
For all you Kris Kristofferson fans out there, this is a Kris song that Emmy and I love, and our good fans who have been following us around these last few days, they like this song too. We're going to send this song out to our three biggest fans.
Your hunger and your problems that are real, and you're dealing with some demons who are driving you insane. I've seen them drag you screaming down the hallways in your brain. You got loaded again. Ain't you handsome when you're high? Nothing matters. Chase the feeling till you die. Let it run on in there, baby. Let it run your life. Let it run your children off. Let it run your life. Let it take the joy you love. Turn it to despair. You knew better, baby. You just didn't care. You got loaded again. Ain't you handsome when you're high? Nothing matters. Chase the feeling till you die.
life. You got loaded again. Ain't you handsome when you're high? Nothing matters. Chase a feeling till you die. Nothing matters. Chase a feeling till you die.
Yeah.
Nothing matters. Chase a feeling till you die.
Once again, Emmylou Harris, Rodney Crowell on Soundcheck in the green space. Watch the video online, soundcheck.org. Chase the Feeling, Kris Kristofferson's song. I get, you know, every couple of years I'll hear a song and think, oh, that's really good. I wonder who wrote that. And then I'll look at liner notes. It's like, Kris Kristofferson again? I mean, outside.
Well, he is Kris Kristofferson.
But, you know, I think to the wider public, you know, they think they know who Kris Kristofferson is.
Was the movie star, probably.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, man, the guy's a really good songwriter.
Yeah, well, he brought a whole different kind of poetry to Nashville and to that whole scene, you know. So we bow down before him.
Yes, he is a poet.
Now, you're both songwriters, although, Emmylou, none of your songs are on this record.
No, I don't have anything in the oven. No fresh batch. And you know what? Most of my career, I've been so happy to record those pre-made-up songs by other people, like Rodney.
Thanks.
So, you know, so I was just delighted to just sing, you know, songs that we picked. Of course, I wanted to do some of Rodney's songs, mm-hmm. revisit those, especially songs that he had written for that other people had done that he had never recorded. Because it's like I wanted people to experience Rodney singing Bluebird Wine the way when I first heard him. So anyway, I had absolutely, there was nothing about, oh, we have to have one of my songs in there. It was always just about the songs that Rodney and I wanted to sing. So.
And I would have been happy if we didn't have any of my songs in there.
Yeah, truly. Well, I wouldn't have. There's our disagreement right there.
If I was, you know, I'm going to sing with Emmy, you know. Doesn't matter what the song is.
Well, but here we are. It was a great way to start us off this soundcheck performance in the green space. And Kevin on Facebook, writing in from Columbus, Ohio, wants to see you in Columbus at some point soon, tells us that he's hooked his laptop up to his stereo system and that you guys sound great. So a little bit of instant feedback.
Great.
Well, we need to borrow his equipment so we can listen to ourselves the way he does.
You can watch the video of this set of performances, Emmylou Harris, Rodney Crowell, on our website, soundcheck.org. March 27th, Beacon Theater, sharing the bill with the Richard Thompson.
The great Richard Thompson. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Who was on our show just recently as well. Although doing his great acoustic solo thing, you guys will be sharing the stage with him when he does his electric trio. Mm-hmm. Having now done this record after 40 years, having, you know, come up, settled on songs, about a dozen songs that really mean something to the two of you, does it feel complete, or does it feel like maybe you've opened another door and maybe there's more to do as a duo?
Well, I don't know. I don't like to plan ahead. You know, but this is just wonderful, and the fact that we're going to get to go out on the road. And yeah, I mean, I would love to do another duet record sometime. You know, I mean, it's as much time as I can spend with my friend Rodney.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, and whether that's making a record or just hanging out with our grandkids.
Well,
because we're both grandparents with separate, you know, families. Here.
Thanks to Bonnie Raitt, we now, our little mantra for this is always be in the moment.
Yeah.
So this is what's happening right now.
So 40 years from now, volume 2?
40 years, it could happen.
Certainly could.
Boy, we should hope.
Now, we're going to wrap up with a little bit of, from the record, Bluebird Wine. Mm-hmm. So now, you mentioned the song earlier, Emmylou.
Yeah.
It's the song that you first heard of Rodney's.
Right. All that to here we are today.
Yeah, with a slightly different version of Bluebird Wine, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Yeah. Well, you can understand. I wrote that song when I was in my early 20s and really gave it a good go. Now, Brian's production and Emmy's performance of it, it was like, you know, dream come true. There's nothing I could find wrong with or pick it apart. But over the years, you know, every time I'd pick up a song, I'd say, well, God, you know, those first four couplets aren't really rhyming like they should have been. So Emmy, you know, said, well, come on, let's record it. You know, let's do it. And I said, okay, all right, but let me rewrite those first two verses, which Emmy, you know, gave me, you know, signed off on it really the other day when she said that she could visualize my wife Claudia in that second verse, and I went, ah, oh, yeah, that's what.
Yeah, I mean, I can just
so,
see it.
You know,
I have a little video in my mind.
Meaningful to me now.
And the meaning of Bluebird Wine?
Joy. You know, it is drunk on joy is what it really is. I mean, but also, you know, it's like a belly full of a baby's Bluebird Wine. I wrote that last verse, and I was singing it. You know, I was writing that directly to my old friend, Guy Clark. Mm. Who, you know, really knew how to have fun.
Yeah.
He still does.
Yeah, that's true.
Another career that has been ageless, but, you know, here the two of you are, after 40 years, finally collaborating on this full-length project called Old Yellow Moon. The album is out now. Emmy Lou Harris, Rodney Crowell, thank you both so much for coming
and
playing for
John.
Us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah.
This is Soundcheck.
And it's write some pretty song about me and you.
The mysterious English songwriter Nick Drake was not so well known in his lifetime, but since his death in 1974 at the age of 26, he's developed quite a cult following and has influenced many other musicians. Now we're hearing from someone who was a great influence on him, his mom. A new album collects the songs of Molly Drake, who was an artist in her own right. They were recorded in the 1950s and recently restored. Visit the Soundcheck page to hear the hauntingly beautiful How Wild the Wind Blows.
The acorn carries an oak tree, sleeping but for a little while. Winter lies in the arms of spring, as a mother carries her child and never knows how wild the wind blows. A thought carries a universe, a seed carries a field of grain. Love lies in the arms of change.
That's a little bit of the song How Wild the Wind Blows from Molly Drake, mother of the singer-songwriter Nick Drake. The album is a project of Squirrel Thing Recordings, which is co-run by WNYC Freakonomics producer David Herman. Up next, got some vacation days stockpiled? How about a rock and roll pilgrimage? Lonely Planet's U.S. editor joins us to help plan out your next music-themed vacation. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Seems like there are travel guides these days for everybody. Vegans, Jewish singles, gay couples. Now there's a guide for the music obsessive, too. Robert Reed, U.S. editor for the guidebook publisher Lonely Planet, has recently drawn on music for inspiration for his travels and his travel recommendations. He's compiled a list called Top 40 Rock and Roll Travel Sites. Robert, I have some vacation days coming. Welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you. You're going to need all of them and more, probably.
So this, you really, this is more than just a travel plans. This is like making a pilgrimage.
Yeah. You know, there is that. A lot of people are thinking in terms of pilgrimages and travel in general, you know, whether it's actually for spiritual reasons or whatever, like bigger themes to travel. So why not rock and roll? I mean, that's like, you know, that's for me, that's probably the pilgrimage I would be on first, and a lot of people too. So put it in one place so they can think about it when they're taking trips in the next, you know, who knows, the rest of their life.
So, I mean, tell me how you got into doing this. I mean, you work for Lonely Planet. You guys do a lot of travel kind of stuff.
That's right.
Was this just a lucky confluence of interests
for
you?
I think so. I mean, you know, when they weren't looking, I was researching on this, essentially. But, you know, there's a lot of times over, that I have been trying to think of things outside of normal travel thoughts and put it into the travel filter, if you will. And so the idea of just rock and roll, I mean, me personally, I was a huge fan. I played in failed bands in Oklahoma and New York when I was younger, and I always wrote a little bit about it early on. So there is that interest, and there is that, you know, level of knowledge, I guess, that I have, that I've developed. And it was an easy fit, really, you know, because you want to go see these places.
So do you approach a rock and roll pilgrimage differently than you would, you know, jetting off to Paris for the weekend or something?
Well, I think so. I mean, a little bit. You know, a lot of this probably will be connected with like a road trip, you know, and people will try to get a few in, particularly for American ones or things like that. It's a little bit like, you know, we had the Lincoln movie, you know, and now people may be reinvestigating Lincoln sites, and they might be going to Springfield, Illinois, or Gettysburg, which is the 150th anniversary this year, as part of kind of a road trip, and you see something that's connected with history, and then you appreciate it differently. I think music works very similar to that.
Right. I'm sure a lot of music fans who've gone to London have gone across the zebra crossing there outside of Abbey Road Studios.
Yes.
So, of course, that is on your list.
Yes, number six, yes.
And there are a couple of other obvious ones. In Cleveland, you have the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Sun Studios, the famous studio in Memphis where Elvis and Johnny Cash and so many others made all those great records. But then there are some lesser-known ones. Jack White's store in Nashville has gotten a bit of buzz in recent years. But then there's this place in Bulgaria. What is going on in Bulgaria that would merit a road trip?
You know, when Kurt Cobain had his flannel on and destroyed heavy metal, it never died. It just moved to Eastern Europe. And I've done a lot of work on guidebooks in Siberia, Bulgaria, Romania. And you do see that heavy metal is very much alive there. Kavarna, Bulgaria, is the favorite heavy metal place, at least for me, in the world, in the sense that the mayor there, actually, it's kind of a drab port town on the Black Sea. And much of the Black Sea is very beautiful in Bulgaria, but not this one. But in 2003, he worked on a heavy metal platform, and he became mayor through this platform. And he basically, these old Stalinist kind of buildings, he painted heavy metal murals on, things like Uriah Heep, and, you know, Billy Idol even gets on there. And then he did that to publicize.
That's heavy metal.
I know. Well, it is in Kavarna. But he started a metal fest to attract attention. And I went there. I've been there a couple times. And not to the festival, but talking to the mayor and things like this. And everyone is so proud. These old grandmothers sitting around. I asked them, well, what do you think about being in the heavy metal town? Oh, we love it. We tell people, yeah, we live in the heavy metal town. So it's a funny new spin on something that was normally kind of an old kind of communist town, essentially.
So is your recommendation to the savvy traveler to go to Kavarna, look at the murals, and then get out of Dodge and go to one of the nice towns on the Black Sea?
It's very near some gorgeous coastline. Bulgaria's coast is really underrated, got to be honest. And the north part gets a little bit rocky. A lot of locals will go and jump off the rocks into the water, and there's some great little towns that you can kind of rent homes for very cheap. It's great road trip country, really.
Okay.
And so you probably wouldn't stay in Kavarna, but just to go and talk to some people, see the murals, if you're there for the Metal Fest, do it.
Robert Reed is with us. He's U.S. editor of Lonely Planet. You can see his list of the top 40 rock and roll travel sites on our website at soundcheck.org. Also, Robert's list of top 5 guidebook songs, which we'll get to in a moment, kind of a subset of your top 40. What's number one?
Number one, and I think everyone should hurry. If you like rock and roll, go quick. Chuck Berry. He's the first guy inducted to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He's 86. He's from St. Louis, and every month he plays at Blueberry Hill in the Loop in St. Louis. It's kind of an unknown secret about rock and roll. I went there a couple weeks ago. It was always something I wanted to do in my life. $35, got there 30 minutes early, front row, met him, got his autograph, and he plays with his family. He is rock and roll. I mean, John Lennon said that. If there's another name for rock and roll, you might call it Chuck Berry. The guy, I think that a lot of people forget how wonderful he is. He wrote all of his songs. I mean, Dylan was very influenced in how just kind of the imagery he used with lyrics and things. Very much Chuck Berry. See him now, because he's not going to be doing it much longer. In fact, he kind of hinted to Rolling Stone a month or so ago that he may be wrapping this up. But every month, $35, St. Louis. Got to see it.
That's worth a road trip to see Chuck Berry in St. Louis. Chuck Berry, Johnny B. Goode. Chuck Berry still plays like once a month,
once a month,
every 3 or 4 weeks in St. Louis.
Yes.
And so that is number one, the number one travel destination for the rock and roll obsessive, according to my guest, Robert Reed, U.S. editor of Lonely Planet. All right, now, your list of top 40 rock and roll travel sites refers to using some of these songs as as kind of audio guidebooks. Mm-hmm. And right at the start of your list, at number 40, we have a good example of that.
That's right.
Billy Joel.
Billy Joel. Now, a lot of times when you think of Billy Joel, sometimes we kind of wince a little bit.
I'm wincing right now.
But the thing is when you look at songs that actually give a sense of place, us in the travel publishing world, we try to write about things that gives you an imagination of where you are. Billy Joel does a really good job of dropping about specific things from the life and world that he knows. Scenes from an Italian Restaurant is a, you know, bottle of red, bottle of white song, his longest song, 7-minute medley about Brenda and Eddie, is really about kind of working class Long Island that he grew up in. And I was curious if I could use Billy Joel lyrics as essentially as a guidebook to a part of Long Island that people drive through as quickly as they can. No one's going to make a guidebook to Central Long Island, essentially, on the way to the, you know, Hamptons or something.
Right, right.
But
come to Hicksville.
Yeah, it's Hicksville, and you talk about the Village Green in the song. The Italian Restaurant is based on Cristiano's in Syosset. The series that he gets, all those furniture is still there. There's the Parkway Diner. All these things that he mentions, you can go to. And, you know, I end up meeting, you know, neighbors and going to this bar we went to and right there by the Village Green. You can do it. Actually really leads you to a fun experience of seeing that part of Long Island in a way that you wouldn't have. So it actually works really well.
Let's hear a little bit of the song, and maybe it'll serve as an audio guidebook for you next time you're out on the island.
Things are okay with me these days. Got a good job, got a good office. I got a new wife, got a new life, and the family is fine. Oh, lost touch long ago. You lost weight, I did not know. You ever look so nice after so much time.
Joel, just a little bit from his epic song, Scenes from an Italian Restaurant. So Robert Reed of Lonely Planet, do you think of that part of Long Island, Syosset, Hicksville, the Village Green, you think of that differently now, having made the pilgrimage?
Absolutely. Listening to that when the clarinet isn't making my, you know, my ears hurt there. I do see that, you know, the Village Green and the bar there, that his home was 2 blocks away from that you pass, you know, that it is kind of grim a little bit. It makes me hear that song when I choose to listen to it again very differently. And that's, you know, that was fun. It was a great experience.
Robert's list of the top 40 rock and roll travel sites is on our Soundcheck webpage. It begins with Billy Joel's Italian restaurant on Long Island at number 40 and concludes with number 1, Chuck Berry in St. Louis. But along the way, there are a number of other really interesting places. Stonehenge. Why is that a rock and roll site? Is it simply a Spinal Tap joke?
A little bit. What's more rock and roll than Stonehenge? You know,
Well, certainly.
That's right. The Stonehenge. I mean, part of it is because of that. You know, that little foam 18-inch Stonehenge that Spinal Tap had in their movie. That was actually based on a not joke that Black Sabbath did in the 80s, and they had an evil dwarf on stage having a fit in promoting their Stonehenge album, which is considered the worst rock album cover of all time, by the way. And one time, this evil dwarf, I have not seen footage of this, thankfully, fell off the stage, and everyone in the audience was either laughing or just wincing in horror. You know, so there is the idea that Stonehenge is something, these kind of like druid type, you know, metaphors that kind of come into certain music. It feels like that. Berlin Wall I put on there as well.
Right.
Because that's one that has been sung about. It's seen as kind of the symbol.
Bowie, of course.
Yeah, you know, Bowie and you know, Lou Reed has the Berlin album, things like that. And I felt that a couple things like that would be nice additions to this as well.
Right. Well, Stonehenge, of course, is worth seeing anyway.
Yes.
If you want to make a rock and roll thing out of it, why not? Your trip from New York to Stonehenge will no doubt take you through London. We mentioned Abbey Road, but you mentioned another kind of guidebook song that takes you to one of the bridges over the River Thames.
One of my favorite experiences. I lived in London for about a year and a half. Love the city. Ultimately, the most English band there is the Kinks. In Ray Davies, he's just, you know, just stubbornly, eternally a Londoner, you know. And I stayed in Muswell Hill, which is a neighborhood up in the hills of North London where he grew up with his brother, saw a number of things there. But the highlight of a Kinks tour, if you will, is Waterloo Bridge. The song Waterloo Sunset is considered the top London song of all time by Time Out. They had this poll, which I saw. It's one of the great songs, really, in rock and roll history. And it's just such an easy thing to follow, because you talk about kind of a lonely narrator leaving the buzzing swarms of people at Waterloo Station south of the Thames, walking on a Friday, you know, looking at the muddy water of the Thames and just calling it paradise, but he's extremely, you know, lonely. You can tell through it. You do that, and what happens is, I did this last year, everyone is walking the other way, or they're just taking the tube to the Waterloo Station to catch a train wherever they're going. And it's, if you're walking across it, to the north, you're like the only one doing that, and you have all of these kind of sea of faces coming. And it really, I didn't know what to expect, and I found that a really interesting kind of...
Did you go at twilight? Did you go at sunset?
Yes, I went right at right at dusk, and we can't see the sun, so I assume it was sunset. It was gray, you know, very gray, but you look over the Parliament and the Thames, is wonderful.
It's a great old song, Waterloo Sunset from the Kinks. Waterloo Sunset from the Kinks. Robert Reed using that as a kind of audio guidebook to a little moment in London. Waterloo Bridge is certainly not one of the splashier bridges. But
no.
If you know the song, it's a place to go at dusk to kind of relive a moment.
Do it, and do it alone, like you know, the narrator of the song does. There's a lot of walkways along the river there. It is a beautiful spot in terms of looking back over London and the Thames. So anyone would enjoy it.
Soundcheck listeners, do you have a favorite rock and roll travel destination? What are we missing from our list? You can see Robert Reed's full top 40 rock and roll travel sites on our website, soundcheck.org. Number 23 on your list is one that had me kind of baffled. You want to explain the Red Elvis?
The Red Elvis is a fascinating figure in rock history that no American knows. Dean Reed, he was from Colorado. His life in the 50s, he was dreaming of being like an Elvis. But he made a hit that got really huge in South America. He was huge in Uruguay, unknown in the United States, so he quickly moved to South America, learned Spanish. But he became kind of a Marxist because he was hanging around like kind of, you know, workers in Chile that were going against Pinochet and things like this. He eventually moved to Eastern Europe. He married a couple East German women, not at the same time, and appeared in like these Soviet films and was huge in Russia. I bring all this up because he basically was the conduit for a huge part of the world to understanding rock and roll. As many as a billion people, it's estimated, may have known Dean Reed over the course of his life. And he was active for like 20 years in music, but none here in the States, right. Mainly because of his politics.
Because he was on the quote-unquote wrong side of the Iron Curtain.
He had a 60 Minutes interview right before he died in 1986 where he was basically saying that the Berlin Wall was put up to keep the West out, and he created a real backlash here in the States, which he was hurt. He died under mysterious circumstances shortly after that interview. It's wondered if the CIA or the KGB maybe have took
had
care
enough of him.
Of him. He was found in a lake in East Berlin, which I went to right before the 25th anniversary of his death, called the Zeutner Lake, and I saw his house. I saw where he was originally buried. His mom brought his body back to Colorado, and talked to these locals who were actually trying to find his body, 25 years ago. And they showed me photos of Dean Reed with his grandmother and stuff. Everyone was really happy to talk about it because he was a big figure around that area of East Berlin. He's a fascinating guy. Tom Hanks bought the rights to his story, and he's been wanting for years to make a movie. If you just go to YouTube and look up Dean Reed, R-E-E-D, you will spend hours of kind of bizarre enjoyment watching footage of this guy.
And then maybe go to Eastern Berlin, no longer East Berlin, but the eastern part of the reunited city, to track down the place where the so-called Red Elvis died there in Berlin. Number 23 on Robert Reed's list of the top 40 rock and roll travel sites. Again, the full list is on our website, soundcheck.org. Robert's U.S. editor of Lonely Planet. This has been a lot of fun.
Thanks. I love talking about this stuff. I see some few things here that I still need to do. So,
all right, a few more to check off your list. Robert, thanks for being with us.
Still be loving you. Our 9 months can't be so long. I'll cherish every mom forever and now, and feel your lips sweet mine.
A little bit from Dean Reed, a.k.a. the Red Elvis. Soundcheck listeners, do you have a favorite rock and roll travel destination? What are we missing? Let us know. Leave a comment on our website, soundcheck.org, or leave us a voicemail at 866-939-1612. But you know, if you're feeling lazy or just broke, you don't actually have to travel to take a musical trip. I know what you're thinking. No, I'm not talking about that kind of trip. Up next, I'll tell you about a recent musical journey that I took while sitting at my desk. Stay with us. This is Soundcheck.
Soundcheck.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. So we were just talking about all these great rock and roll travel sites, and it's true. You can get a real thrill out of standing on a bridge that's mentioned in your favorite song, or finding the alley where your favorite album cover photo was shot. But I'm also thinking, you don't need to get on a plane to take a musical journey. I found myself taking one yesterday on my computer. Here's how it started. The English singer Kate Nash just released a new video for a song she calls Girl Gang. I really liked her first record a few years back, so I figured I'd check up on what she's up to now. I was a little surprised at how thrashy and punky her new song was, but I was even more surprised because one part of it had a familiar ring to it. We'll be right back. Something about that chorus, girl gang running round in my brain, was naggingly familiar, even though, obviously, I'd never heard the song before. Then I noticed the video mentions the California skater punk band called Fiddler. So I Googled them and found their song, Cocaine. Turns out this new Kate Nash song is a cover of this recent Fiddler song with a few different words. Now that chorus sounded even more familiar. But once you put the word cocaine back in where Kate Nash had said girl gang, I realized I had heard that line before. More than once, in fact. Last year, the neo disco group Escort crowded into our soundcheck studio and played this.
Got cocaine running around my brain.
Getting somewhere, our trail of musical crumbs led to Escort and this version of an old song called Cocaine Blues. Here, the musical journey hits a fork in the road. Someone on Fiddler's YouTube page had pointed out that Fiddler's song is based on a Red Arnett Western swing tune called Cocaine Blues, but it turns out there are actually several songs with that name, and the Red Arnett song is the one that Johnny Cash and a host of others have recorded. But it's not this song with that cocaine running round in my brain chorus. This Escort version was a cover of a reggae tune done in the 70s by the artist known as Dillinger.
You see, no matter where I treat my guests, they always lock my kitchen best. Cause I've cocaine running around my brain. I've cocaine running around my brain. I want you to dig me so and soul sisters, I want you to hold me tight because I'm out of sight and I'm a dynamite. I've got cocaine running around my brain. I've got cocaine running around my brain.
Okay, so to recap, I started with what I thought was a new Kate Nash song, and suddenly I'm back almost 40 years and listening to a Jamaican reggae artist. But Dillinger here is clearly riffing on a song that he probably heard sung by Bob Dylan.
Every time my baby and me, we go uptown. Police come and they knock me down. Cocaine all around my brain. This whole cocaine is making me sick. Cocaine all around my brain. Yonder come my baby, she's dressed in red. She's got a shotgun, says she's gonna kill me dead.
Now we're getting somewhere. That Bob Dylan version of Cocaine Blues, not to be confused with the Johnny Cash song or the Eric Clapton hit called Cocaine, was where I first heard that repeating line. But where did Bob Dylan get it from?
My girl, come here, y'all, and look at some red. My girl, come with a gun, want to kill the dead. cocaine has got all around my brain. I says, run here, somebody, won't you please run in a hurry? This cocaine has got me worried. Cocaine has got all around my brain. Some people don't know how come they can't go to bed. Been out all night long, ain't slept none yet. This cocaine is giving me a fit.
That's the Reverend Gary Davis, the blind bluesman who came north to New York in the 1940s and became a huge influence on the folk scene here. And a quick bit of research online showed that he got it from an itinerant carnival musician in 1905. That's a journey of many miles and over 100 years, accomplished in an afternoon, and it started with a few vaguely familiar lines in a brand new song yesterday. That's going to do it for Soundcheck today. Tomorrow on the show, when women stepped up to fill manufacturing jobs left behind by soldiers during World War II, the guitar industry was no exception. We talk with the author of Kalamazoo Gals, a story of extraordinary women and Gibson's banner guitars of World War II. Plus, Grammy-winning Argentine pianist and composer Fernando Otero plays live in our studio. Thanks for joining us. See you tomorrow at 9. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.